asking how many of them could type in English, and 7 people put their hands up. You know, my heart missed the beat. You know, I thought, my gosh, how are you going to type a newspaper every day if only 7 can type? And so we started typing. We bought 70 second-hand typewriters. The story of that newspaper is very interesting because I really stuck my neck out, and the Japanese newspaper in Tokyo was 12 pages black and white. So the plan when I arrived was actually 12 pages black and white. And I just looked at New York City and I said, hopeless. Let's get something worthwhile for New York City. Father gave me a big talk about it. It's got to be the best. So I said, all right, we'll have 24 pages. And that produced a really great reaction. Impossible, you know. So Father just looked at me and sort of said, all right, you know, he didn't even commit himself. So we had ordered this fantastic computer. When I got there, they told me all about this fantastic computer. When we get this computer, it's going to make everything easy. It's so beautiful, so big. It's the best. It never came. And we got to around about November the 30th. It was December the 31st. And I realized there was going to be no computer because they kept on missing the date of delivery. And I realized that, that's a golden call. So we got some second-hand equipment together, and in the basement of the New Yorker, we got the newspaper going. And I always remember we were just in the, you know, like 3 weeks to go, and then Father came in and he said, paint the entire offices! You know. And I picked myself up nearly off the floor, which I think, yes! And, you know, I thought, my God, if we're going to do painting the offices and preparation, we never even practiced. It took us 3 weeks to prepare the first newspaper, right? 3 weeks to get the first one out, right? And then the next one, you only had 24 hours. So, and I got all the staff and I said, you know, you've had it. I said, I just have to tread the wine press, you know, and get my hobnail boots and tread the wine press of the fury, the wrath of Almighty God until we've got it right, you know. Off we go. So, but anyway, we had a lot of fun and we squeezed out newspapers for 7 days. And yeah, it was very much a squeeze, right? Because always it was late and there was all kinds of problems. The weather was bad and lots of indemnity paid. And anyway, got the thing going. And then the next amusing incident, I'm telling you the amusing incidents now, not all the serious discussion that goes on, right? How far we did many wonderful things for us. There's beautiful things you did. And I know how important it is that if you do things for Father, you really give everything, right? And Father will help you all the way around. And the Father does help you in a fantastic way. So I want to keep it amusing for you. And the next thing was Father sent for me sometime. I forget the day now. We were sitting down talking. And he said, I want you to move the newspaper in one day. And I just said, yes, Father. And, you know, I came out praying. My God, it took us weeks to get that equipment together. Weeks. Now we've got to move it in one day and still produce the newspaper. He said, you mustn't miss a day. You must produce every day. So, I don't know if you can think the idea of actually moving a newspaper and printing it at the same time and producing it. And I was really praying hard. Heavenly Father, help me. You know, I've got to have an answer somehow. I can't do it. So, Father, shall we go back and see Abraham and tell him, come and have you seen what we've done, some of the work? I want you to see all the work we've done. So, Father, I went back in. I said, oh, Father, you know, before I move it, I would like you to see the real thing, you know, how we put it all together, the bits and pieces. So I showed him all the bits and pieces, as much of the bits and pieces as I could, you know. And Father never said anything, you know. He never said, oh, it might take you a bit longer. He just said, you know, one day. So anyway, you know, I was really praying. One day is 1,000 years, that's no good. Then I thought, oh yeah, Saul, David and Solomon. 3 kings, 1 mission. Maybe I could squeeze 3 days. So I went away and it took me a couple of weeks to get the staff together as usual. I said, you know, it's got an impossible job. We've got to move this newspaper in one day. One day is 3 days. So in 3 days, you've got to move the newspaper. So we planned it out and we moved our newspaper and printed every day. And really and truly, it was a really difficult job. And then we had to put it in the Tiffany building, which had a bit of fun. And all the time, Michael Vorder was being prefers to take over
the newspaper. And I must tell you one
really exciting moment I had on the newspaper.
Everybody was wanting to promote it and put a big splash, you see. And New York is a place of big noise. But I held off the splash. I said, no, we don't want any splash. Let's do it very quietly, mysteriously. We won't say anything until we actually publish it on December the 31st. Actually, I thought maybe we wouldn't make it, but let's do it very quietly. So I said, let's tell everybody we're going to produce it in the spring of the year, and then we'll surprise them by coming out early. So we actually did this. And then all the media were really interested in who is really behind the newspaper, Reverend Moon, everybody. And so we had nothing, really. We wouldn't allow any television, any newspapers in, or give any interviews. And then 4 days or 5 days later, we had this press breakfast at the Hilton Hotel, and we invited the New York Press Corps, about 400 people. And we put on a little slideshow. And basically the media, you know how hard-bitten they are? They came to mock the movies, right? And pass their sarcastic comments. So, you know, I've been praying about it beforehand, and I've always been very bitterly hurt by the way the media attacked Father. You know, it really hurt me very much to think, you know, Father's my father, and they really say nasty things about him, and I'm going to straighten them out. I've always wanted to have a bash at them. So I thought, everybody wants to promote the newspaper, but I'm going to take the New York Times apart. And so we set about taking the New York Times, but I wrote a real nail-biting speech, right? And I didn't show it to anybody, because if I'd have shown it to the business section, they'd have crucified me. They'd have said, Dennis, you know, we want to sell the newspaper, not just pick an argument with the New York Times. So I actually kept it secret in the newspaper, and I picked one girl in the secretary somewhere. I said, right, type it out, run it off 500 copies, and give it back to me. I don't want anybody to know. So I got these 500 copies all ready to hand out to the press. And we went down there, and they did the presentation, and I gave the major speech, you see. And I really crucified the New York Times. And everybody was absolutely aghast, actually. It was really interesting, because the media people were really coming to mock. And we had a person on each table. And I remember the atmosphere on the tables was very light-hearted and casual. And basically mocking, until actually I started. And I always remember the comment of one member. He said, you know, I was sitting with this journalist, he was really saying nasty things. And I said, after about 4 minutes you were speaking, Mr. Omi said, he says, my God, he said, he's right. And there was a deathly hush came over the thing, and I tore into the New York Times for printing articles in support of tyranny in the fair land of democracy of America. And the press pinned me up afterwards. There was a television camera and all these guys with their microphones, and I was pinned up against the wall. And I said, look, I've got a newspaper to produce. I haven't got time for questions. And, you know, went off, and they pursued me down the escalators right the way into the taxi, and off I went. And, of course, there was a sort of big hubbub, you know. And shortly later, I suppose about 3 hours later, Father sent for me. And, you know, I thought, maybe my neck really has gone this time. So the Koreans present had given Father a really good account of what I said, you know. And so Father sent me, and he said, what is it you said about the New York Times? So I said, oh, I can't remember it all. But so he said, I want a blow-by-blow account. So I basically told him how I, you know, I've been very upset with the New York Times for a long time, and I really like to straighten them out.
And the wretched publisher of that newspaper has betrayed America and betrayed Father so many times. And, you know, I said to Father what I really thought about it and what I did. And I thought it may be the last thing I'd do for the newspaper, then. So Father just looked at me and he said, you go down to Washington and do it again with the Washington Post. Well, I don't tell anybody that one too, right? So kept it quiet, and we organized it up in the National Press Club, and duly slaughtered the Washington Post for their iniquity. And actually, that newspaper is a very important thing. Yes,
Father doesn't actually want a newspaper.
But because the newspapers are so satanic, the only way is to set the new standard and hammer it out. And I would make the point that
when I think of how the media have delayed Father's dispensation, you know, I feel a burning anger for the media that have betrayed the Prince of Peace, the Mighty Council, the most pure man that ever walked the earth. And, you know, I've often said that our job is to really straighten them out and make the world in the right way. So many of you may think, well, I have some kind of hatred for newspapers or newspaper staff, but I wouldn't make the other point. If we really love them, we must prevent them from selling themselves down the river of iniquity. You know, if you put millions of people off Father's, you know, you can't get out. Because Father made the point very clear to me that if you put people off Father, even though you may change yourself, all the people you turned away can accuse you in the spirit world and say, because of you, I spat on Father's name, I said nasty things about Father. And you can't get out until the last person you put off has gone into heaven in the right way. So this is a very serious point. If we really love newspapers, we will straighten them up and bring them into a righteous position. So don't think having a strong stand is a very loving position for newspapers. And so one day all the newspapers of this country are going to say thank you, Dennis Orme, for preventing them from committing iniquity. So just give you when I left the newspaper, they had a little, you know, bye bye. Somebody wrote a poem about me, and I always think, you know, talking about yourself is a waste of time, really. What other people think is much more important. And this was a very kind of beautiful little poem by one of the newspaper stars. So I thought I'd just read it to you. I don't think many of you have seen it, actually, because I don't show it normally. But I had many wonderful moments on that newspaper. Father gave me a wonderful staff, Japanese, American, European. We had a great unity, and we fought a great struggle when I was there, and handed over to Michael Ward, and he's done even better than me. And whenever I go to New York, I call in on the newspaper because I'm so proud of the brothers and sisters that work on it. And so this chap wrote a poem called A Man Named Mr. Orme. You may have climbed the mountain. This is another letter. You may have climbed a mountain, you may have weathered a storm, but tell me, have you ever started a paper for God with a man named Mr. Orme? He's not like the president of the Times or the Post or the News. He believes the paper should reflect God's heart instead of Satan's blues. The Times says he's not qualified, and he admits he doesn't fit the part, that he only cares what his father wants. His father chose him for his heart. His heart is deep like an oil well, like a canyon it is wide. Lord, have mercy. Because you won't get any from him if you're ever trying to hide. He'll whip you up with his spirit, but you'll feel good when he's done. You won't even be angry, you'll feel like being his son. But he won't take the glory, he won't claim you as his own. He says each one of you must learn Father's heart. I'm just trying to help you hope. So after the newspaper is on top of the mountain and the news world has calmed the storm, we can remember back how it all started with the men. Name Mr. Orme. Well, you know, I was just Father's shadow. And I make the point because it was only by fulfilling for Father that we could get where we got. And a friend of mine, a professor from Italy, Massini, Professor Massini, who was actually in the newspaper business, he came to look at the newspaper about December the 5th. And I showed him right round everything. And he said, you must be mad to think you're going to have a newspaper on December the 31st. He said, if you ever get a newspaper, he said, it's a miracle. So the next professor's meeting, he came up to me and he says, oh, Mr. Orme, you made a miracle in New York. You know, actually, a lot of people we got a lot of credit for the church. And every day I had breakfast with Daniel Lerner, who was in the New Yorker. And he's a professor also in communications and things, and we used to go through the newspaper and do what we could to make it better. And you know, I like to say that the stand we took against the New York Times produced immediate results for Father. It was interesting, sort of all kinds of people came crawling out of the building, the senior editor of the Reader's Digest, the leading crime correspondent of the News World, all sorts of very distinguished people started coming forward to support Farber in New York. And it showed me that one of the key things is to stand for righteousness. You really must have a strong stand for righteousness, and you'll be surprised, there are many good men in every city who really want to make that stand, but they can't find how to make it. And we are the only people, actually, who know how to make it. So we must make it with great vigour. So then came back to this country, and you can say that we are here. And May the 13th last year, Father came. 13th last year, Father came out of the blue. And we just started a parents' conference in Paris or somewhere morning. And I just got there, I just arrived, and there was a call saying, come back to London immediately. And Father's coming, so I told everyone got sick or something, and I disappeared. And because I couldn't tell them what was happening. And then the Father got stuck at the airport. And I do believe that the dispensation of this nation hung on May the 13th, Saturday, down at London Airport, because they refused to let Father in. This was a very great shock to us, because we had got parliamentary approval from the Secretary of State to say that they wouldn't discriminate against anybody from the Unification Church, and here they were stopping the founder, Reverend Moon, from entering. So we, of course, never understood at all that we were going to have a big battle. So I was down there completely unprepared. I hadn't got any documents or anything. And Father was stuck. And so we got stuck into a good 4.5 hour argument. And it was a pretty fierce one, you see. And I think Father could hear it, because I didn't know at the time, there was the detention block, and here was us arguing at about, I don't know, midnight or sometime, you know, it's going on all night. And it got very intense, actually. And I was really giving them the business, telling them that as long as I'm an Englishman, I'll never allow Marxists to run the Home Office and penetrate and stop Father, and, you know, they can really watch out. And anyway, we were going hammer and tongs backwards and forwards. I said, you've got no right under the immigration laws and all that kind of thing. And at one stage, I swore at them, you see, and at this immigration officer, I was really angry. And he said, that's not the kind of language a religious man uses. And I said, look, I said, Jesus cursed the fig tree, and the fig tree is innocent compared to you. I said, you better straighten your mind. And yeah, the guy was really shocked, you know. And we had a real argument, you see. And I know they must have, you know, they must have thought, my gosh, what a bloke. Anyway, after we had some very intense moments there, I was absolutely determined I would never allow them to hold Father. I mean, that was an incredible, terrible situation to think maybe Father got locked up instead of allowed into this country. Wouldn't it be terrible? Yeah, you know, absolutely determined. I mean, wasn't ready to hit them on the jaw, but I would have thrown them all down the stairs if they weren't careful, and I was getting steam up, right? And so we were having a lot of fun. And they backed down. And so they wouldn't let Father in, but they would have certainly let him come to Lancaster Gate. And they said, we must bring him back to the airport on Monday morning. But position, trying to establish the point. And they kept on saying, well, how long do you think Reverend Moon will stay? I said, oh, well, as long as he wants. He's entitled to 6 months, you know. I said, what do you mean he's entitled to 6 months? He says he doesn't want to stay 6 months. I said, well, that's up to him. I said, but you've got to allow him 6 months. And, you know, it went on backwards and forth like this. Anyway, they let me in to see Father. And, you know, I had tears in my eyes because I thought, my gosh, you know, what a dreadful thing this country should do that. And Father, so I apologized. I said, you know, Father, I'm so sorry that this should happen to you. And I really had tears in my eyes. And Father looked at me and he smiled and he said, you know, he said, I use language like that in Korea too. I shared many beautiful experiences with Father and been fishing with him many times. And, you know, he really is a very beautiful father. He's a man worth giving a life for. He's a man of sheer perfection and joy. And I share that experience with you because the dispensation really did hang for this country
on that day, because if Father hadn't have been allowed here, maybe we wouldn't be here today like we are now. And Father was allowed into the country, and then we had the struggle, of course, of extending his visa, and we finally subjugated the Home Office, and the adjudicator ruled, of course, that they were wrong, and that it was perfectly all right for Father to be here. And four distinguished professors and Nobel laureates spoke up for Father, and we had a very good lawyer who completely tore the other side apart. And that day was a very great day, because when Father came in May the 13th, remember, he sat here in the early morning, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and he spoke to the British family, and he spoke the following day to the British family. Remember him saying, and he said, for the first time he felt at home in the Western world. And well, I was really struck. You know, I've been with Father many times, and many times he's been very restless and rushing here and there. But when he was in London, he basically, apart from some trips we made, was fairly quiet in his movements. He moves a great deal to Father. He stayed here, and I had the great privilege of sharing meals with him for 4 months, 120 days. And all the time I was with him, he was straightening me out spiritually. I had some very unusual experiences in the spirit with him, and there was some kind of cleaning up operation to do on me. And Father was really, to be with Father was very, very beautiful. I can't explain in words the sheer beauty of Father's family, but I can give you just the odd instance of the beauty of Father's family, because one day I took him to Woburn Abbey, and we had a great deal of laughter on the lawn, sitting on the lawn. Father and his family, they got into one of these happy times. And it's, you know, when you think of the immense burden on Father's shoulder, to see Father completely happy is really something. And everybody was laughing. Mother was completely beside herself with stitches of laughter. Father was absolutely burning over and engaging him, and everybody was absolutely laughing their minds out. And it was a very wonderful time. And we got back in the car to come home, and they all started singing. There was me driving and the true parents and family singing, and they fell asleep singing one by one. Now, most of us fall asleep anyway, but to actually fall asleep singing, to me, is really something, right? To sing. And finally there was only Ye Jianim left, and she was the only one singing, and she fell asleep singing. You know, it was amazing. I never dreamed that I would ever witness such a... Now I was lying on cloud 99. I was just driving home, and I saw so many times the sheer beauty of God and Father and his children. And to see Father with his children is so important, because we actually don't know really how to handle children until we actually see Father handle his children. He's been the first pure Father, and Father is very tolerant and very strong and very loving. And I always think we must be very careful we don't mix up our understanding. You cannot be merciful without being strong. You cannot really handle children without setting up a very good standard internally, externally. So Father's children are full of dynamic energy. But when he says pray, they all line up and pray in the most beautiful way. They really are attentive to him, and yet at the same time, they have this great dynamism, which he allows them to be children. So I remember being with him on another occasion, and Hyojin Im was wanting him to not go somewhere. This was in America. So Hyojin Im actually stood on Father's toes and was holding him like this, standing on his toes, trying to stop him going, you see, because, you know, children want attention. And Father was just talking to him like this, as if nobody was standing on his toes. You know, so many times I've been with Father, and his children have been crawling all over him and doing all kinds of things. So to see Father's nature and mother, and not just on an external side, but to really see the depth of value, is very important in true parents. True parents' heart is really a very, very fantastic heart. And until you can grasp the depth of courage of Father in tackling the most difficult problems, facing mankind. You know, I always think it's easy to try and think of courage in various ways, but there's two or three kinds of courage. And certainly the courage that Jesus displayed when he went down to Jerusalem, knowing he was going to suffer, is something that Father has displayed many, many times. When he went to Pyongyang, when he came down again, he known many times that Satan would cause him suffering, and even God caused him suffering, but he's always marched with a happy heart onwards and always loved God in a very, very great way. And it's that beauty to see Father prepared to battle, like with the Soviet Union, with the entire forces of the devil, and see his spirit. So many times I've been there when, you know, bad news has come in, you know, the latest persecution, and I've watched Father very diligently, and I've always seen that kind of smile come across him as he sort of just shakes his head at the next insult and the next thing. But we shouldn't be lulled into inactivity by Father's depth of heart. Now, the point I make is this: Father has not come here to just suffer the insults of the media and others, and we must be very clear about that. Our job is to protect Father, defend Father, and bring Father to the position where he can be declared King of Kings, Lord of Lords. If we are true children, the worst thing a child can find is to see his parents in the greatest difficulty. I really mean this. The worst thing a child can find is to see parents suffer unjustly. Now, we have all witnessed Father suffering unjustly, so when that happens, we must count ourselves guilty, because we didn't prevent it, we didn't fight the battle harder, we didn't subjugate Satan and get into the action. So spiritually, there's one great law which I'd like you all to remember. That is, that if you really defend Father, he will always defend you too. If you stand for righteousness, God will protect you. So Father really needs dynamic sons and daughters who will stand up and subjugate Satan. So I didn't mention it in my previous spiritual history, but while I was coming along the spiritual path before the family, I once received that I was a Joshua. I had two deep revelations from the Old Testament. One was to do with the prophet Daniel, and the other was to do with Joshua. And when I had this revelation that I was a Joshua, I thought, my gosh, I'm going to have to fight military battles. So I went straight and figured out, what did Joshua do, you know? He wiped out 33 kings. My gosh, you know, must be going into war, right? So I started all the leading battles of the world, and all the military commanders for quite some time. Actually, I was very serious about it. I thought, my gosh, you know, probably going to have to fight communism, and you know, and I was actually very intrigued by it all, because studying those things, I began to see how God really turns the destiny of battles, and it didn't turn. Of course, until I heard principle, I understood more that we should all be like Joshua. We should all want to go out and subjugate Satan and build the kingdom. And so I remember kind of really feeling intensely that one day we might have to really scrap it out. And looking at principle more deeply, I feel that we're moving into that final stage now, if you want to know the truth. I feel that the final conflict to destroy communism is not far away. And what it needs, really, is great dynamism and spirit. And because of true parents, we are actually the movement that's going to break down the whole colossus. And I felt that, like, I'd like to wipe out 33 newspapers that attack Father. You know, Joshua killed 33 kings. Can't go around knocking kings off these days. There's not even 33 around, is there? So, but if you think kings are the devil, and who are the leading kings of the devil? Well, most of them are newspapers who spread their rottenness. So I set about
subjugating the media in this country, and I think we've just about made it on the national press, actually. The national media is very careful now what they say about Father. So we've got a mopping up operation with one or two local newspapers, and we will have subjugated the media. There are three things that I feel very important. Home church program is the basis for victory. There's no question about that. That's the grassroots level. But there are three things that I feel we have to win the nation. And I've always been a man determined to win the nation. One is to win the academic world. And because Father had the conference in 74, we have over 200 professors positive Father. Number two is to win the media. And I think we're 80% of the way in winning the battle of the media. And the third is to win the politicians. And we're just really starting that kind of program to win the hearts of the politicians. And that started last year. And I was really very impressed with what went on. We don't have large numbers of PR people, and but our minds are very clear about what we need to do to win the nation. So I want you just to think seriously. To win a nation, you can have 300,000 people and still have your nation be delivered to hell. Because what are 300,000 in 50 million? Nothing, you know. So it's a question of what are we really going to be as a movement. We don't want to be just numbers. We've got to be dynamic revolutionaries, able to speak and teach principle wherever we go, reach out into the home church and throughout the land. We need the 500 best preachers in the country. We need to be such a dynamic spiritual force that we actually inspire and govern the thinking of the nation. So we don't want to be like another church, like the Congregational Church. We've got to be a real revolutionary group, always up to something. And that brings me back to that first statement I read about Father, that we have to be the bullets to attack the enemy. We have to be the shields to protect the nation. And we have to be completely determined and understand that because of true parents, God, and through the victories at Yankee Stadium, Madison Square Garden and Washington Monument, actually the victory is for us to take in true parents' name. That is our real destiny. So when you pray, I'd like you to try and feel how urgently God needs a nation. Number two is how God has prepared this nation to be his standard bearer. In the First World War, it was this nation that ran the flag up and suffered the greatest casualties of all. And it was this nation in the Second World War that fought long years from 1939 to 1945. And in both occasions, America only followed this nation. And I believe in the third conflict, we have got to be in the position where we stand vigorously for the truth and the love of God and the principle, and America will follow. And I believe history turned its moment last week when Mrs. Thatcher was elected. And I know God blessed this country with oil. Like God discovered America at the last moment of history, the last final 400 year period of preparation for the Messiah. But like God blessed this nation with oil, not at the last hour, but at the last second. So if the only industrialized nation on this earth, we can be totally independent of all forces of blackmail. We are not subject to Arab pressure, to American pressure, to any other kind of pressure. We actually in this island can stand up and fight vigorously for liberty, for justice, for God. And I'm quite certain that all these things have been put together, including the crusade. When Father came here May the 13th last year, he said to me, I stayed in England. There's only two countries I've stayed in longer. That was Korea and America. To stay 120 days in England was the longest he'd ever stayed anywhere. And I know that spiritually there is a great significance that this nation must be the nation that really sacrifices itself in the stand for the values we so dearly love. Now, I believe the victory will come when we must
pass on actually a greater vigour in our movement.